So it's kind of funny. I had prayed that God would give me some insight into what I should do next year for the Mighty Talk. Because even though I wanted this year's for us to be talking really and intended for it to be a little bit of a rambling conversation about men's ministry, and it has certainly been that, the thought, what would I teach through? Because next year I want it to be more teaching, something that's more like me just teaching through some stuff. And I was like, God, it'd be really cool to know a year in advance what it is I was going to teach through. What would that be? And I think I will teach. Struck me today, and then as we're singing it, it's kind of solidified in my mind. We teach through that hymn. I would use that hymn as the biblical reference. Here's a cool couple of things about the hymn and the hymn writer. George Duffield Jr. is who wrote the song. A child of Presbyterian ministers who never really did a great job being a Presbyterian minister himself, it sounds like. He started at a church that was dying and was willing to take it over, which was great, but then it died. And then he worked in like five other churches during his lifetime for about 4 years each, which is usually not considered a good sign. So anyway, I don't know much about him. His son was a famous hymnologist. This is what struck me that was funny that I had to share with you guys. So I was looking up. It comes from some, I don't know anything about who Dudley Atkins Ting is. I've looked that up. I'll know that by next year. But his words in a sermon are what inspired it. He, in a sermon, apparently said, "Go now, ye that are men, and serve the Lord." And 1,000 men were converted. This was in the 1850s. And the following month, that same pastor was injured and on his deathbed said, "Tell my brethren of the ministry, wherever you meet them, to stand up for Jesus." And Duffield was so inspired by that that he worked both of those lines into a hymn that he wrote. When he spoke at the man's funeral was when he released this hymn, was at the man's funeral who had inspired him to say it. That's pretty potent right there. I mean, this is a sweet hymn that stood around for a long, long time. It's very cool. Duffield preached a sermon on Ephesians 6:14, "Stand firm, wearing the whole armor of God," not surprising, and ended it by reciting the hymn at Ting's funeral. I don't even know if it's Tying or Ting. I'll find that out by next year. But I do have to add this part. The hymn was excluded from the Presbyterian hymnal in June 1990. Anybody want to guess why? Okay, that there have always been people who have been opposed to it because of its militaristic feel. That's not why, though. Why it was cut from the Presbyterian hymnal in 1990?
Is it because it's not handicapable?
That's not handicapable. They were afraid it might offend a handicapped person. That just boggles my mind that anyone thinks this is a song literally about standing up, like that's what this is really like. I weep for our race every time I read something like that. Like, we just really, anyway, sorry. The implication of saying, like, so a handicapped person couldn't stand up for Jesus, obviously. I mean, right? That's what they're saying by taking it out of the hymnal. Anyway, sorry. I'm just. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Like, this is the level of foolishness in that decision. I appreciate the thought of being careful with someone's feelings, but for the love. Okay, so update from last week. I missed last week, and Matthew took you guys through a conversation about some of the stuff that you could be doing. Anybody want to update me on something from that stood out to you? Anything that stood out to you about, like, here's something that I realized I need to be doing, or something I need to spend some energy or time on, or that kind of stuff? It's okay if not. Just curious. Okay, yeah.
I'm way more eager to read that verse than loving others. Love of the flesh.
Yeah, there's nothing, in order to love others as you love yourself, that requires a certain amount of loving yourself in order to be of any value. There's nothing inappropriate or unbiblical. Loving yourself is not the same thing as being selfish or narcissistic or egocentric. Now, you can turn it into that. Now, the only time it's really hard is it's hard to be self-sacrificial in your love of self. That makes that one becomes pretty tough. So there are versions of love you need somebody else for, but there's a type of love for self. If love is desiring the best, desiring God's best for somebody, then it's totally appropriate to desire God's best for yourself. That's totally appropriate. Yeah. Good? That's a good reminder. Anybody else? Right. Not being an event-driven or program-driven church also applies to the program of the Sunday morning service. For us to be under the impression that what we fundamentally do is hold a worship service on Sunday morning is just flat error. That is not what defines the church at all. It is a special event that the church does. There's a gentleman in our church he's not here tonight, but he preaches on Sunday morning at nursing homes. And so he came to me saying, like, the last church where I was had kind of told me that they couldn't really support me because I was never there on Sunday morning. And I was like, well, tell you what, why don't you come here? Because, like, I want partial credit. I want to be the hub that you come from to go minister to the people who I'm not ministering to. So, like, could we be the hub? Well, your wife can be here on Sunday morning when she can. And on Sunday mornings when you can, great. And if you can't, you'll let us know when you need help. And I know some people in the church have helped him at times and stuff. Yeah. Oh, did you stop and help? I didn't get to.
Well, we helped. I'm sorry. I guess I assumed you were here. Anyway, she's homeless at Bullard. My wife, my daughter, saw her. We stopped, gave her some stuff.
Good.
But what's unique about that, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I usually don't see homeless people more than just one.
Right.
And now she's another pass under in Bullard. She's another pass, I mean, just now. Right there on the 49.
Well. Yeah, I've been surprised that there is, I don't know if it's a Texas thing or not, but like there is a homeless community in Tyler, obviously a number of them north of the loop, but as I understand it, there's actually a few homeless communities that actually live like out in the woods and have like little communities that they're kind of squatting out in the woods and people bring them bottled water and stuff like that to help them get through, but I don't know much more about it directly. That's more of what I've been told than I know of. I'm so hesitant with some of that stuff, but yeah, absolutely. That's important. Any other thoughts? So one of the main things that had come up over the last few weeks and that I'd heard from numerous people, not just in here, but otherwise, is the idea of this fear of failure, how that plays into our willingness to risk our specialization, how that plays into our unwillingness to try things we're not specialized in, like that whole model. And so I want to attack that tonight, but I want to mention a couple of examples of things that are coming up that we as a church do, and I want to give you some mindset. So one of the changes in mindset we're going to be looking at over the next probably at least year is going to be this idea of we're going to be kind of ferreting out and finding examples of places where our church people are acting like not owners of the church. And so instead of saying, no, this is my church. And so if you walk into a, so if you have, for example, if you had a Sunday night life group And you walk into the Sunday night life group meeting space where you are, and you go, well, that's a bummer. No one took out the trash from the life group that met here this morning. That our mindset would be, well, then it's a good thing that you came Sunday night, because it's your church, so you get to take the trash out. Like, that would just be the automatic assumption. It's not, well, who do I call about the fact that the trash didn't get taken out? That would never cross our mind. That it would be, well, this is my church, I take the trash out. That, oh, the Sunday morning class, they left all their coffee cups out, and they didn't put their coffee. Or if you're in the Sunday morning group, that if you're going to confront somebody on it, it would be the Sunday morning group leaders that you'd go like, hey, what's the deal with you always leaving your coffee cup? Like, you wouldn't, well, you'd call a staff member or something for that. It's your church. So that would be, even in little ways, we would continue to push that back to us. I don't mean from me to you. I mean to us, from this mindset of specialization when it comes to the church. That we would go like, well, that's mine. I mean, it's a... I remember being so surprised when someone stopped me, surprised when they saw me walking down the road and I was walking and talking and picking up trash. I mean, Lance and I, when we walk, sometimes we pick up a trash bag and take it with us. So being like, well, that's amazing. You're the pastor. You're picking up trash. I'm like, has nothing to do with me being the pastor. I'm a member of the church, so I'll pick up the trash, just like I assume you would. Like, seriously, that should not be a... I mean, it'd be sad if it was a surprise the pastor was doing, because he's somehow too good for that kind of stuff. But no, that mindset, well, that we set up things, we take down things, we put up chairs and we take down chairs, and we set aside a little time to do that stuff because it's our church. Not, I actually think it's dangerous to become a big enough church where the church people don't feel the need to do that themselves. I actually think that's dangerous. I don't want. If we built a building someday and had 2,000 people in it, my hope would be that we would still pick up the trash, clean up after each other, vacuum the floors, stack the chairs, that we would still do that, not that we wouldn't hire professional chair stackers. And especially if we're doing a group. So if you bring a group, you're bringing your kid out here for a birthday party, if we're doing that, which by the way, I do too. So you bring your kid out here for a birthday party or something like that, that if you show up and you go, oh, look at that, whoever they would happen to be, the group before us left a mess here. Well, that's, whew, man, it's good that you're the next group then, because then now you can clean that up. Rather than our mindset going to the specialization, well, there's a professional who's supposed to do this. I would love for that to be our engagement level with everything here. And I don't care if there's, this was weird today. I had a gentleman meet with me today to ask questions about the church. And he said, we're leaving this other church, and I wanted to talk to you about why and see if you thought it was right and all that kind of stuff. And he said, one of our big fears was coming to yet another big Baptist church. And I'm like, I thought you were coming here. Because I will tell you, I have no intuition for this being a big church. Like, I don't think of it as a big church still. And so maybe I never will. Maybe I have no mindset for that, but I think of this as just a church. Is it big? Is there a lot of people here? I don't know what counts as a lot or not. I mean, I know Barna counts us as big. I looked that up, but wow. I know we have lots of children, and we need people to be working with them. That's what I know. Which is a huge opportunity. Like, I'm going to share at the ministry huddle in 2 weeks. I've been trying to find her, and I can't find her. She's... Some of y'all have some Nacogdoches connections, but they used to own a printing shop. I don't even know if she's still alive. It was my Sunday school teacher named Miss Pat Livingston, and I'm trying to find, because my goal is to like get her in front of everybody or something and say, this was my children, the woman who taught me to love the Bible stories is this woman. And I think we get to heaven, God will say, like, hey, here's some cool things Chris did, but literally, honestly, let's be honest, the only reason he did is because of Miss Pat. So she actually gets 9/10 of the credit for anything that, otherwise he wouldn't have done any of this junk. So he's like, I really feel like this is how we've got to see children's ministry is investing in the, so that's always going to be the case. Here's some things. So here's a cool comment I want to make. So I was driving in a couple days ago on 2813, and I noticed that maybe with the, and I mean this maybe with the exception of a golf course, we have the most perfectly mowed grass anywhere. I mean, it's unreal. It's like, it is like art. It is perfectly, these perfect lines, and it's, what's that? My house looks like Helen Keller mode. Okay, so I'm like, I've got, and did the weed eating and planted the grass. I mean, it's now gotten worse. Like, I lost my front yard now looks like the heads of many of the men in our church. Like, it's, the middle section is just bare, and I have no idea what happened to it. Like, last year it was fine. This year, no grass. I don't know what killed this perfect circle, but I just was driving and going like, this looks so cool. I mean, it looks so good. Who do we have? And it is Chip Pittman who does our grass as a volunteer act of mercy. He just, I mean, I love that. That to me shows the difference between, you can't pay someone to do that good a job on something like the grass. It has to be a heart issue. So, I'm scared now. Paul's back there. Is he encouraging you to ask for a raise now? Yeah, exactly. Who is it? I mean, I know it's not Chip. Who did it? No, it's... So I will tell you, that kind of thing, like, I love that. I love to see that in the church. When someone who, like, cares about something, and this is something they love and they enjoy, and they... Part of what church's purpose is to give you a chance to do that. Yes, sir. Is Trey here? I've seen him. A lot of times Trey is here, but yeah. Trey also mows. That's right. Brings his own mower even. Wow. So that is that's a gift. And it also saves all the rest of us. There are hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars, that now gets to go to other things in the ministry of the church. Huh? I think it'll be thousands of dollars that now gets to go to other things because of this, the perfect storm of that. Somebody asked me, the new and prospective members group, I met with them Sunday afternoon, and they asked me, like, how do y'all run programs or schedule programs or whatever here? And I said, we have two ways. We have the good way and the bad way. And so the good way is we have someone in the church step up and say, I'm going to take this and run with it. I'm going to own this, do this. And I gave him an example of the Thomas ministry. I gave him an example of the Highland Games. I gave him an example, like, we have a number. The fireworks is obviously one of the most incredible examples that anywhere. And so if you don't know that, probably most of you guys here know that, but like, those are church staff supported, not church staff run. Church staff supported. And so whether the ministry is mowing or cleaning or whatever, like, that's, those are the ones that are awesome. And they last and they grow and they become more effective and they become more potent. The other ones are the ones that the staff starts. And we've decided that if the staff starts an event and after about 3 years no one's taken it over, it's done. We just kill it. And incidentally, we usually kill them. And no one ever notices that we killed them, because it was like, no. 3 or 4 years later, we killed one called, was it called a family getaway? Was that the term for the spring break thing? Family getaway? Yeah. Family getaway. And so it had been dragged along like a dead horse for years by the staff. The staff put, I mean, tons of energy to make this thing go, called people to convince them to come. A third of the families who went were staff families. It was just bad. And so he said, we're gonna hand this over. Someone take over. We're going to hand it over. I think I said it on a Sunday morning. We're going to cancel this unless someone takes it over. And no one said anything. So we didn't do it the year. And we didn't do it the next year. And the next year, someone stopped me one Wednesday night and was like, hey, so we're gonna do family getaway anymore? And I was like, yeah, this is the third year we've not done it. I'm glad you're... Man, your radar was refined for the family getaway, wasn't it? Do we do that anymore? It was a fun event. There's nothing wrong with these things, but there's no. That's not how this works. And so, these are examples. So for one, did you bring a list, or you got sweet? You got a sign up sheet? Create one. We need to start talking about the Highland Games in October, like the 13th. What's the date? Yeah.
The idea is that as we have been growing the Highland Games, we've been bringing people to the church that really would otherwise not have any kind of exposure to what we have going on here. It really is the idea. And we've gotten support from some interesting areas. One of the clans that come and represent their family is a pastor in Dallas, and he's really jumped on board and trying to encourage more people to come so that folks can learn about their history and their family lines. And really, it's just touched a lot of really unique parts of town and kind of all over North Texas. So this year, what really we'd like to see is there be some folks that can step up and be, I would call them a director of different areas of the event. For the most part, myself and some other volunteers have just made it happen. That's from coordinating vendors to be here, organizing athletes to come in, judging the athletic competitions, organizing the music of the day, food vendors, any advertising that we do, all of it. So I really feel like that we are to a point that we can impact as many people as we do at 4th of July.
Yes.
Randall and I, he's been awesome in the last 2 years helping me with the athletics. We got to go to a festival a couple weekends ago in Sherman, Texas. It was the second year that they had done an event. And there, when we got there, we had to park on the other side of 75. There were shuttle buses that we waited 45 minutes to get on a shuttle bus to take us to the festival. There were at least 10,000 people there. I mean, we could never, nor do we want to ever get to that point because we would block 69 and the toll road. But all of the people involved in making that happen, I really was inspired by that and thought, you know, I need to let some things go myself and bring people on board that can be passionate about it, do it with love and have a heart for whatever it is. So I have a couple of job descriptions, I guess, or areas where I would love to have people serve. And if you want to know a little bit more about it or find out more, you know, just come talk to me afterwards. Kind of like with Randall, when he first got involved, he's like, so there's a bunch of big dudes that are throwing things at me. Should I be concerned? Where should I stand or where not? And, you know, it's easy enough to learn. You pick it up pretty quickly to save your own life, actually. Yes, absolutely.
Paul ran out. Lance, could you go find a clipboard and a blank sheet of paper and a pen? We'll send that around. If you're interested in helping Derek with this,
so here's,
sign up.
There's really four or five different areas that, if you feel passionate about any of them, I'll just give you a quick highlight. But somebody to help with communications, whether that's digital, whether it's putting up flyers, whether it's putting the banners up on the highway, doing some radio spots. Randall's got a connection with a radio station. Just different media. We need a media person. Then there'll be athletics, and that involves judging, setting up, tearing down, just kind of the overall maintenance of the day on the day of. A director for vendors, somebody to help coordinate the merchants that are showing up, and that will include some of the exhibitions. This year, really, the intent that I wanted to bring home was we would have a lot more experiential event. So you can see a blacksmith making an axe, or you can go and watch a sheepdog herding sheep through this obstacle course, or you can see a actual Highland cow. All sorts of things that you can see and touch and feel that make it a little more tactile, I guess. So somebody to help organize vendors, get them in their spots, make spots for them, be the liaison between coordinating where they need to go. The fourth would be the same type of role for the clans or the families that are kind of going to come and teach the history of their family. And that would be some email communications, A little bit of day of setup and tear down, but that's about it. And then we started last year selling T-shirts, and so that's something where the director would coordinate getting some of the teams to help sell T-shirts and helping get an inventory so we know how many to repurchase for this year. Those are really some of the main roles. And I'll tell you, it's very rewarding when people, you see what kind of time they're having and they can experience the love of God and in a way that maybe they never knew God existed in that type of society. So,
very good. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So he's got a clipboard. If you give him a piece of paper, you can sign up and say and put a contact and say, I'm interested maybe in working in one of these areas or another one. But and another one that we need for this and for fireworks is kind of an evangelistic role. And I don't mean that literally necessarily as going and telling people about Jesus, but that you're willing to walk around engaging in conversation with people. You know, what brings you here? What do you do here? Where are you in Tyler? Part of a church? What's your relationship with God like? If that seems like an appropriate part of the conversation, and we'll have flyers to hand out and that kind of stuff. Events like these two in particular that are so community focused, we want to be doing that at those events. And that can't be done like at a booth. You know, come here and us tell you about Jesus. I mean, I guess we could, but instead that's just happening in and around. And I know, listen, I know we've got our own families we're bringing to these events and stuff like that. So it may be important that you set aside some time to come up with your family or whatever, and set aside during that time some time to be wandering around and being involved in other things or both. Yes, sir? Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, he's truly a random guy then. Can't get any more random than John, right? Yeah, that's what it's, yeah, this is, we don't do fireworks because we love fireworks. I mean, there's nothing wrong with loving fireworks. I believe me, I'm a huge fan. We don't do Highland games just because we're all redheaded. We do these because we want to impact the community. And why we do these rather than some of the others is so that we're not duplicating what other churches are doing. That's why we're talking about, like, you guys saw the Easter, the Palm Sunday festival. Well, that's something I could see us. I mean, we had more people involved in that than we've had in a long time, and that was really not even open to the community, and we ran out of parking spaces for it. And so no one does a Palm Sunday festival. They do a Halloween festival. Well, we don't need to do that then. Everybody else is doing it, and they're doing a great job of it. Go there. So we want to do it in ways that other people aren't, to reach out to the community. And if two or three big events a year to reach out to the community is great and sufficient for one church to not burn itself out and whatever. It's a lot of work. But when we can do that and engage with people and stuff like that, that's what we're talking about. Those are events not just for us. So, you know, if you're going to rush here, get here super early on fireworks day to kind of save the very best possible seat, save enough room so that you can get some random stranger and invite them to come sit by you or something like this. Don't serve yourself in these things. We're the owners. They're the guests. And so we need to be making sure we serve them as much as we can while they're there. And we want to be doing that. So when you see the emails going out, as they will soon, you will get emails saying, hey, we need your help at fireworks. Men, we need to respond. That's what men's ministry is. We step up and say, how do I serve? Where do you need me? And if you've got a young family like I do, it may mean that during the event, you're not super available. But for the 3 hours before, you might be. Or you can send them home, and for the 3 hours of cleanup, you can stay. Like, those are important, vitally important. So cleanup afterwards is the thing that people always forget to sign up to do. When you have a bunch of people doing it, it's very, very fast. And when you don't have many people doing it, it's incredibly slow. So that is part of our new methodology. We're going to continue to push that more and more. And if the men of the church are doing it, because it's kind of a natural thing. I don't know. This may seem super sexist or inappropriate even. I don't know. But it seems to me like very often it's a wife who the first voice will say, the people this morning didn't put up their coffee cups. Like, I don't know if that's a wife thing or just because they're always constantly doing it at home 24/7 every 10 minutes. But But for us as men, when we go, well, it's a good thing we're here so I can clean that up then. If you're unclear as to this, like the trash dumpsters right over there, any trash in a church can go there and you have permission to take it. Like you don't have to be insurance certified or anything, like the driving the vehicles or something. It's something anybody can do. You have blanket permission. So I would say this is as we are moving into this even more and more, that the actual role of the men's ministry would be this integrated, systemic engagement with all of the ministries of the church. In fact, I'm going to hand this out. I just moved so fast that the mic caught wind in that. Did you okay hear that? See, my sleeves are doing it. I had a martial arts instructor who could do that. That was when he like kicked his blue jeans, like, thwack. Never could figure that one out. So, actually, leave me one copy. Somebody hand me wherever the list is. Yeah, one. Thanks, Jeff. So I'm going to go over this quickly. This will be all we'll do today. And next week, we're going to go over 1 Corinthians 16, 13, and 14. Key passage for us as we're discussing all of this and living this out. So this question, I want to make sure and get to this today. This question of the fear of failure and how it plays into our willingness to risk. The fear of failure and the way it plays in. Did we run out over here? There's more coming. We made 50, and I know there's not 50. I don't think there's 50 people in here. You got those videos ready? I hope we'll do them in the right order. Let me look and see if I can pull them up so I can tell you what order. And you may remember, David. Okay. Perfect. So we want to start with So do you have rope swing? You have rope swing? Just rope swing first. You have that one or not? Oh, I just can't see it. Well, that's Kevin's swing, but that's close to the Kevin rope. So when we used to go on this camp out, and man, it takes him forever to go. So when we first started with this rope, and we put up this rope, and we would swing from it at this guy's camp out that we would do. It's too bad there's no sound, but, you know, this was before iPhones, so we actually had a video camera and no audio for it. So that's how the day starts, is with stuff like, you know, with guys swinging and it takes forever to go and that kind of stuff. And then we don't have me on video. I was the first, if I remember correctly, to jump off the actual tree. Do you remember that, Paul, if that's right? Because remember, I counted down for three and didn't jump. Like this, I remember that so well. Like I stood up there in the tree and I'm looking down. I'm like, man, it's a long way down and it's very scary. And what'd you show? Oh, don't show another one yet. Was that the back flop? Yeah. Okay, you can show that one since you showed it. This happened later, and a little bit later in the day. I don't know if he's showing it. It doesn't show back there. Yeah, that was one of my therapists. He wasn't then. He was just a young gun then. So you saw how far it was. I mean, we estimated 30-ish feet down there, and the water's fast and running, and of course it's dark and all that kind of stuff. And so we don't have a video of me, but I went first, if I remember correctly, and I was standing up there, and I took forever. Was like, I even counted, did that 3, 2, 1. Don't show any others. Pause. Wait a second, because I got to do it in the right order. I was like 3, 2, 1, go, and I didn't. Go. I was like, did I jump? And everybody's like, no, you're still standing in the tree. I'm like, shoot. And finally I jumped and went forever. So one guy finally gets up there after we get tired of the rope. Well, I jump out and I jump down there. It was a big deal. Okay. Then, so the second one I want to show is Kevin dive. Go for it. Oh, it's going. Of course, I can't see back there. So after a while, jumping isn't enough. Somebody's like, I'm going to dive. Will you dive? I'll dive. And so he dives. That's how that works, right? As the time goes on, people start throwing it. Let's do me and Paul. So Paul climbed up into a tree that's way higher. So there's him jumping, and then I jump at the same. So Paul climbs up much higher and jumps from a tree that's like 20 feet higher to jump in. And his was over the bank even. So we jump at the same time, and I'm going to do it from way up here. Okay, so then it's like Paul says, I think I can do a flip off of the tree. So do Paul flip next? So see how that, okay? And then three amigos last. Okay, so here's what I want you to get in your head is this is how you overcome fear. Is you have a group of guys who are all kind of daring each other to take the next step. That's one of the main important roles of men in each other's lives. Is that we go, man, I'm not going to do that. That's crazy. I'm not going to jump. I mean, in a period of 3 hours, a group of a dozen guys, you start with, you barely are willing to swing into the water. And 3 hours later, three guys are jumping at the same time, trying to swan dive into the river and doing backflips and jumping from higher trees. Like, that's the progression of men in each other's lives. And so that's why. So the men's ministry that I've done and have always done is called the Phalanx. I've done this since I was like 20, called the Phalanx. And you've heard me teach about that. The Spartan culture and the Greek, even the Greek culture, but especially the Spartan culture, has essentially nothing to offer us. I mean, they were a dark, evil, backwards, twisted culture. But they knew how to fight, especially given their standards at the time. So the idea of a shield that covered all the way from your below your eyes all the way to below your knees that you carried and you interlocked with each other and you fought with, like, I've never been in combat. Some of you may have. What I have read about being in combat, which I know is not exactly the same thing, but what I've read about it says that what gives men the courage to go into combat is the other men with them. Is even the thought, other men can do this, I can do this. Other men have done this. Hemingway's book, Men at War, begins with him saying how scared he was to go into combat. And then an older man said, son, men with a lot less going on than you have been doing this for 10,000 years. You can do this too. And there's something about that reminds us that this can be done. Other men have done this. Other men can do this. So the things that don't come naturally to us that we're not gifted for doesn't mean God hasn't called us to it. But the good news is God essentially never, or I almost would say it's not quite never, and if you count the Holy Spirit, it is never, but essentially never calls us to stand alone. I mean, we have to if we have to. But think about in your life how rare that's actually been. And even in the times when we think we have to stand alone, you stand and instantly someone else stands with you because it turns out you weren't standing alone. God was calling more than one of you to stand. And you just had to stand first before other people would do it. Somebody has to take the first dive before an hour later, three guys are going to dive together. Somebody has to take the first jump before anybody does a backflip. Like, you have to, that's part of what this is about, is that we as men would have that attitude of how do we, to quote from Scripture, how do we fan into flame the Holy Spirit in each other? How do we encourage each other to press on to more? That's what it means. That's what men's ministry is about here. How do we impact, and the word we is an important part of it, impact the culture of this church and the church that we would say we're taking the lead in this. This is us being in this together. It's why. So if you've ever been to the Phalanx page on my website, it's all insider trading. I'd love to have tons more. Guys who come up with a fun date idea. Like, after all these thousands of hours of counseling with women, I now have an insight into what kind of compliments they typically like and what kind of gifts they typically like and what a date, how they measure it. That doesn't mean I'm always doing it right, not even nearly, but I've gotten this insider trading. These women are, as a therapist, they tell me stuff as a counselor that they don't realize I'm going to tell other men in general to give us. I mean, it really is like having a spy. That's exactly how I see it. I mean, I'm an interpreter. I know what they're... And so I publish that stuff on the website because we're all in this together. We all need ideas. We all need encouragement. We all need to be uplifted. We all need somebody to challenge us. We all need that. It is like, it's not an individual doing this on their own. Whatever it is, we're supposed to be in alignment, lined up, shoulder to shoulder, and shield to shield is the idea. Now, you can't be best friends with everybody. That's why we don't talk about trying to create a sense of intimacy in life groups. That sounds like something you can't force, intimacy. And attempts at that are bad. But you can create opportunities for friendship, and sometimes some friendships will become intimate friendships, meaning they know you internally and you know them internally. That's all I mean by that word. And so to say, yeah, I can have lots of friends. I'm only going to have a very few intimate friends. It's weird to have more than a few intimate friends. That's not common. That would be an odd thing and probably not safe. But we all need a couple of close friends, of brothers, of a fellowship there. That's key. And so this idea of what is going to spur you on to good works, to life. That's what men's ministry is about. And if that's you looking at what we have, and if you say, here's something that is needed. So, by the way, and also you'll notice on that list, and we'll talk about it more next time if you want to, but on this kind of manifesto here, the idea that's on the back, that there's a little asterisk on the front that goes over to the back, and one of them is, men today have little excess time in stereotypical youth ministry to men, because that's the stereotype for men's ministry. It's just youth ministry for men. You do the exact same activities that the youth do. It's just that men are invited instead. There's nothing wrong with those fun things. And if you want to do that, if you say, you know what, I want to take a group of guys to go play paintball. Good. Let us know. We'll send out an email to the men saying, this guy wants to, or don't. Just send out a text. Or send an email yourself. Or use an email that you're already on that has lots of men on it. Say, get the word out. I want to go take a group of guys to play. Great. You don't need a church activity. You don't need church's permission to involve other church men in something. Let them know, let the guys know. If you want to do that, great. But we don't want to do that kind of thing necessarily as men's ministry, because then men feel obligated, like, oh, the men are having a paintball thing. I mean, I guess I haven't been around the family much, but, you know, it's going to be embarrassing for Chris if only four guys show up, so I better. We don't want that. And if only four guys are going to show up, tell me so we can cancel it and stay home with my family. But that's part of our, you don't need to be dragged away from your family for more. We want anything we do in men's ministry to be something that you would say, this is something important for me, for whatever reason, to involve myself in with my family. It's worth me being away from other ministry opportunities that generally are going to be higher priorities. That's why it's okay if only a handful of people are involved in something or this or that. That's fine. But when we do ministry together to involve our families in that ministry, that's what matters most. We want to turn men's energy and attention to their main ministries at home, not away from home. So we don't do just events. We don't just throw a bunch of events at the wall. And we're not going to. There are events. And if this is something that you go... So in other words, you going on a fishing trip with a kid or with a guy you're mentoring or whatever, that's men's ministry. It's just discipleship. You taking your child on a trip to Jarabacoa, Dominican Republic, that's men's ministry. Because it's the men of the church impacting the ministry of the church. That's what men's ministry is. If it's training you to do that, that kind of stuff, those are, we don't want to draw people away. We don't want to give you things to compete with the ministry that God's called you to already, whatever they are. Anyway, that's part of that. But if you're one of those who says, I don't know if I can work with third graders. I mean, that's, man, what the heck? Well, there are other men working with the third graders. That if they can do it, you can do it. There's other people working with the kids, working with the teenagers, working with the whatever, and if they can do it, you can do it. I loved, Jason, was it, what word was used for when you were asked if you were called to work with the children? Do you remember what words? Maybe this is secondhand, maybe I'm messing something up here. I seem to recall somebody, you telling me or somebody telling me that they had asked you, were you called to do children's ministry, or is this your passion, or is this your heart, or something like that to come work with the kids?
The word I used was no.
No, right. No. Yeah. That's So the distinction, I think in many ways, the distinction between Paul McKenzie, the first person who said this, you're cool. But the first person I ever heard say, like, being a man is not about not being a woman. It's about not being a boy. And I think the boy attitude is, well, I don't have a passion for this. This isn't interesting to me, so I'm not going to do it. And the man attitude is, this is something that needs to be done. I'm responsible for, so I do it. There's nothing wrong with finding things you're passionate about and focusing there. That's like Chip mowing the grass. I mean, he loves doing it. He enjoys doing it. And it's a need. When you can coordinate those, man, bonus. But it's not required that you love it in order to the fact that someone's got to be responsible to do it. So I want to really encourage you here at this church that's part of our mindset. I have no passion for doing the dishes, and yet someone had better do them periodically. And it's either me or my wife or one of my teenage kids, and sometimes they've got lots of homework, and she's already toast from the day, and so I don't have to have a passion for doing it to do it. It's just an opportunity to serve. Yeah, Ryan.
I would also say, like, I feel like there's room within that to find a niche that fits you better. Like,
yes.
If third graders just find your last nerve and turn into a trampoline in 5 seconds, then maybe you're better off with, like, 2 year olds.
Yes. We often treat those as, I think, competitive, and I don't think they have to be. If this is what absolutely needs to be done, as men, we can do it, even if we hate it. But you're right. I don't think that's here. I don't think that's required here. You may not love it. It may not be your number one favorite thing to do, but certainly if you go, yeah, I mean, it's always crazy to me that some people like working with middle schoolers. Like, I just think that's wild. I like my middle schooler. I don't like many of yours. Hank's okay. I can tolerate Hank pretty good. Hank's a neat kid. I used to do Buffalo River trips with kids, and they were like 9, 10, 11, and 12 years old. And man, nothing will teach you how much you don't like other people's kids. Like being on a canoeing trip for 4 days with them. Like, I like them when they're little, and I love them when they're teens, but man, that there's a couple of years in there where I'm just ready to twist their heads off, I think. So I told one kid who I now love and mentored for years, like, I'll be honest with you, you didn't survive the Buffalo River trips by much. There was more than once that I thought no one would ever know. They would, I don't know what he fell out, hit his head, I guess. Just, anyway, he appreciates that about me now that I didn't, that I thought about it, but that I didn't. He appreciates that. So as guys, I totally agree with Ryan. So yes, should we be willing to step into whatever gap is there? Yes, that's part of what it means to be a man. Is that the case here that you're going to have to do something you absolutely hate? Probably not. And if so, probably not for long. There's a lot of places to serve in children's ministry, almost at every age range. There's places for people to step in. Children's ministry is not your thing. If you absolutely feel like you need to find something to avoid it, around here, you really need an excuse to avoid it. My excuse is I'm on stage on Sunday mornings. Otherwise, you better believe I would be in there. I feel like it'd be necessary. Probably kind of used to joke about having Rebecca come out and say, like, hey, we need more people, and just, like, drop the mic and head back. Like, somebody else preach, because I'm going to go work with third graders. But I don't know why I always pick third graders. I like third graders, actually. Maybe that's why. Kindergarten, yeah, they're tough. They wear you out. Any grade that Michael's in is going to be tiring by the end of Sunday. So, okay, so take that with you. Check it out. See if you're on board with that. We can ask questions next time. I want to pray. I am encouraged this Sunday. So we are hitting John 3:16 this Sunday, and I want us to pray for John Redfern Sr., who will be leading us this Sunday. He's preaching through John 3:16. Any chance of getting any further than verse 16? Or is that like, you'll be lucky to get through 16? You're trying to make it to 21. I think your son's dubious. 16 is so powerful, right? Yeah. You're like, probably do 3 weeks on just 16, right? But so, John Redfern Sr., we're going to pray for him in a second and his getting ready to do. So this will be the Redfern Boys show this Sunday. I'm excited about it. Like, I love being here and being able to sit under great teaching. And so I'm looking forward to that Sunday. So I'm pumped about it. So be praying for him and for the whole service. I mean, John 3:16, obviously, this is a verse that may hit some people in new ways. This is a passage that may hit people in new ways. It may hit us in new ways. So I want to pray and close out our time and pray for him and what we're doing. And I'm so grateful that we have a church that God has blessed with such a deep bench. Father, I thank you that you have called us to live out ministry. And that since you, through our genetics, declared that we would be male, that is the opportunity for us to live as your men. I pray we would put our faith fully in you to save us. And at the same time, not just to save us, but to give us life and life abundant, to give us purpose, to give us the value that you have for us, to show us where you would have us live and work. Even as Ryan said, that we would look to you first. God, what would you call us to? What have you gifted us for? How do we make that be part of the ministry that we have to the kingdom? Lord, I pray that you would provide sufficient people to lead and raise up a new generation of believers through this church. God, I think there is a real power here for that. And as I hear account after account of people whose kids really, really want to be here, and I just can't even imagine, Lord, as much as I hated church as a kid, it's so cool to hear that. God, I pray you would provide them with the tools and the food that they need spiritually to go out into the world and lead us in a revival, in awakening in the West, to return to you. God, I pray that as men, we would make that path for them, that we would blaze the trail for them in that process, God, too. Thank you for these men and for their willingness to be here many weeks and to engage in these conversations. And I pray that the men's ministry here, the ministry here, the discipleship here would be lived out here and beyond in very clear, very powerful ways, that your name would be glorified, that your reputation would grow, even in a place where it has been indoctrinated against you. Lord, that we have just enough of you to not really catch you fully. So Lord, I pray that you would take good care of us as we seek to follow your way. In your Son's name we ask it. Amen.